Welcome to the Hello First Name Podcast. The Hello First Name Podcast revolves around the term personalization and is brought to you by marketing author Rasmus Holin, founder of Omnichannel Institute and chief experience officer at the marketing automation software company Agilic. The podcast is based on the book Hello First Name. Each episode is based in turn on a chapter from the book, followed by a discussion of the very same chapter with an expert marketing practitioner in the following episode. As always, you can buy the book on Amazon or other bookstores. You can also choose to listen to it all for free on your favorite podcast service. You're also very welcome to download the abstract of the book for free, and all models, of course, are able to download. All downloads are sponsored by Agilic. I'll make sure to put a link to everything in the show notes. But you can always connect on LinkedIn, and I'll be happy to reply and help out. Hello, and welcome everybody to this episode of the Hello First Name podcast. We've had a few week break, but now we are back in business. And today we're going to discuss chapter 14 from the book, namely tying it all up in the bow tie of personalization. But today we're giving it a little twist, since obviously the bow tie of personalization is a topic that we've covered before. And we will be giving it a twist of loyalty, that is. So I'm very pleased to welcome VP of Loyalty at Strawberry Hotels, Håvard Hofdahl. Håvard, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Rasmus.
You've been working at Strawberry for some years now. And before that, you were at the consulting side, the dark side, as some say. And you've also been in retail. But in your own words, can you tell us a bit about yourself and your career?
Yes. First of all, thank you for having me. So, as you mentioned, I'm now working in Strawberry and been here for almost 10 years. So I actually started my first job within Strawberry as a corporate trainee. So I got the chance to move around within the company and so forth. And as mentioned, I worked as a consultant within CRM with a lot of bigger retailers in Norway and the Nordics. But my background is from travel and tourism and hospitality management. So I actually come from a small town in the mountains of Norway called Røros, which was an industrial town for many, many years. But somewhere down the road, it changed and became a exotic destination for tourists with a lot of focus on local foods. And so parts of the hospitality genes has sort of like followed me from where I'm from. Mm-hmm. I had a father that worked within airlines for a couple of years and so forth. So it's tourism has always been sort of like the core of the heart to me. So working with retailers, super interesting, a different ball game. But then this chance came along where there was this corporate trainee position where learn the ropes and try hospitality from every angle. So I jumped on it, and now it's been 10 years.
That's kind of a big thing. What is so special about working within hospitality?
I would say, and this is probably the answer everyone would give from every industry, but no days are the same. And people are different. But for me, I would say the main reason is, on the one hand, you get to deliver people's dreams because experiences and travels, that's really sort of like the top of where people can dream and actually go out and do things they've been dreaming of. But on the other hand, there's also interfering with the everyday lives of people. If you're a corporate traveler, if you're attending a funeral, if you're... So you have the mix and balances of... every range of customers, I would say, if it's the honeymoon to the boring conference or whatever, our role is there to play, not only physically at the hotels or at the destinations, but also in the sense that we communicate and try to cater to the guests or customers, if you will. So there's a dynamic vibe that's always keeping sort of like your heart going. I think that's the tick that gets hospitality people to love the game.
Yeah, I'm thinking there's, I mean, not saying that all retail is without emotion, but I think grocery shopping is pretty mechanistic, and you can stir a bit of emotion about what people are having for dinner Saturday night. But apart from that, it's pretty much a matter of convenience. Whereas, at least for me, when I go traveling, and those are the experiences that I cherish the most, and that I have with my friends and my family, and so a lot of emotional stuff there is present and something that you can probably put into play.
Yes, absolutely.
Is it true that you work within hospitality, you also get to travel more? At least that's what sort of I would think.
Yeah, you do. Or we are at least pretty spread out in the Nordics. So obviously it's important to keep intact with the hotels and the destinations we have. But I think also it's sort of parts of the, if not escapism, but the curiosity of actually traveling, discovering, looking at competitors, seeing different destinations. Yeah. There's always inspirations to get somewhere to sort of like reach that emotional state you're referring to. So having the balances and knowing what's around, I think that's pretty common between people working in hospitality.
Sounds fantastic. And then Strawberry. I think a few years back it was known as Nordic Choice Hotels, and now it's called Strawberry. What kind of company is Strawberry? Obviously, it's a hospitality company. You can put a few numbers and words to size and where you are and so on.
Yeah, sure. So we changed names from Nordic Choice Hotels to Strawberry May of last year. And people have been sort of like, why is the hotel name out of the picture? And we're no, it's obviously a central core and still part of it, but we have more to do than just putting heads in beds, because we are now 230 something hotels in the Nordics and growing. But we also have a lot of restaurants, bars, obviously, conference facilities and spas. So if we were to display ourselves as a restaurant chain, we would be one of the bigger ones in the Nordics as well. Or on the same for spas, for instance. And so I would say the change is one, making it a regionally or Nordic brand that comes out of this new ambition of creating a sort of experience ecosystem, but also a payback to our founder, which has this story about strawberries when he was a boy selling strawberries in the town square and apart from that. So yeah, that's the company in the boring numbers. But if you ask me what is Strawberry, I would say it is a company of passionate people that actually cares for the people around them and the environment, and does a lot of actions to try to balance both what we call people, planet, and profit, and try to mix it up and be a bit different than the competition.
Who doesn't like strawberries, by the way?
Exactly.
I heard you had like a really, really big launch in Norway where there were strawberries everywhere in Oslo all of a sudden.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. So that was fun.
All right. So the chapter that we're going to discuss today from Hello First Name is called Tying It All Up in the Bow Tie of Personalization. And just on a very sort of broad note, I mean, you're VP of loyalty, but what is your experience working with personalization and how does the two fit, if they do?
I would say personalization is, you could have sort of like a professional experience in translating it, or you could be just anyone. And you also share a lot of thoughts around, it's really in the eye of the beholder, how you actually perceive and how you want to be catered to. So me, from a personal level, have my preferences and have a lot of experience on and good and bad moments in this. But from a professional perspective, and to your question, I think definitely personalization is something that can contribute into creating loyalty. But I'm also very much fond of, if you work at a place or if you work in an organization that has sort of like understood the purpose of loyalty, that it is in fact long term, that it takes time to measure the impacts of it, that you have to invest in it, then you also see that it could be the other way around, that the loyalty also could provide greater tools for even better personalization, because you make customers have a high trust to you, be willing to share more data, be more honest in giving feedback. So from my perspective, it's really, they are really combined and interfering with each other in a positive way.
Yeah, so loyalty, I mean, personalization, the personalized experience built from your past experiences and data can help create more loyalty. But the loyalty in itself can also make it easier to do personalization because you simply get to know people that you see more often better, yes. And then you collect more data. Yeah, that's a very good point. I never thought about it that way. So the chapter that we're talking about, the bow tie of personalization, how you combine the insights with the content, how does that make sense from a loyalty perspective? I mean, I made it as sort of a very generic model. That's how me and my co-authors envisioned it. Does that even make sense in a loyalty world?
Yes, absolutely. I think it does. And as every sort of like theoretical model, it takes place from different angles and concepts. For me, for instance, if I were to just like read it with or look at the model without knowing the details of it, I would say that the moment of truth, that's for me working in hospitality, that's when the customer stands in front of me. That's the physical place where I can change. The model is the same because it's actually about when you can meet the people on the premises. It's about what channels you utilize, and so for me, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Also, coming from the hospitality perspective, I would say
that was great. I was crossing my fingers like crazy there.
No, it really does. Yeah.
So we try to make it as generic as possible for everybody to sort of be able to relate to and to sort of boil it down to what is really the core here. You're mentioning the moment of truth. I remember when we met in Oslo, we also discussed this. So in a like hospitality customer journey, where do you think where's the most important moment of truth in that journey? What is it that makes the difference in terms of whether someone becomes loyal or not, for instance?
I would say, first of all, we have to know, obviously, the basics of who you are. Is it the first time coming to us? Have you been with us at this particular hotel or in any other hotels or our facilities previously? Are you expecting us to know more about you than we show? Because it's, and this is not only talking about personalization or in the loyalty sphere, but in hospitality, we're talking very much about hygiene factors. The more sources we give you to look if we fail or if we don't meet your basic expectations.
Getting feedback.
That hurts even more than actually over-delivering. So I would say, but then again, people come from various sources. It's not like if I was an online retailer only selling my goods in my own store, I would know that everybody that gets the shipment done and their products back home, they have done a transaction directly with me.
Yeah.
If I have a hotel with four walls and people come walking in, of course, we would like as many as possible to do the bookings directly with us. But that's not the case in the travel industry. So in some occasions, there's actually a lot of information we do not have. And there's not every person we have enough data to. But at the end of the day, they have one thing in common, and that is that they will at some point stand in front of one of the people working with us. And most often than not, that is the reception. So for me, the sole moment of truth is actually when you walk into the hotel, there should be an ambience, an atmosphere. You should see people looking at you from the employees in a positive manner. You should feel welcomed and heartwarm walking in, regardless of the occasion. So that's for me the one thing, and a lot about that moment can be delivered without trying to do too much fuss on who you actually are. Yeah. It's more about...
It's the core product.
It is. And obviously that can be further enhanced if you have the right data, obviously the skill sets, but also the systems to put your people out there in the front with the best chance of succeeding in knowing who you are and what your needs and
Yeah, we were discussing also this. I mean, you're talking, people walk in and they can come from many sources. And one of them is obviously online travel agents, where you don't necessarily get a lot of data. You just know that there's a booking. And so you don't have any chance really of personalizing anything until that moment of truth that you're referring to, where the person, the guest, is standing in front of an employee from Strawberry, and the whole ambience and the sort of hygiene factors should really be up there. And you think, wow, this is a pleasant experience. And then I think you could argue that personalization could come on top. So if you knew this person from before, and if you've, through the experience when they were staying at your hotel, had the chance to delight them to such a degree where they really feel happy, then the next time or in the communication between this time and next time, you should be able to personalize and add that little extra on top. So when they walk in the door next time, you know who they are, you know what their room preference is, you know which kind of pillow they like, you know whether they use the spa or the hotel and the restaurant or whatever. And that can maybe take it to a next level.
Absolutely. And I do think that there's obviously a lot we can do from people coming from online travel agents and so forth as well. And as you're saying, their job stops at our door. When you're inside our buildings and in sort of like our ecosystem, it's up to us to actually deliver. So if I ask you, did you stay at any great hotel in Paris, for instance? And you might say, yeah, this was this really gem of a hotel where the staff was attentive and everything. You wouldn't describe that feeling back to if it was booking.com or Expedia. You would value that for that particular hotel that actually delivered it. And that's where we, from the loyalty perspective, come in, because obviously we cannot reach the whole world with our own selling channels. We are dependent on the travel agents to some extent. Yeah, so our job is really about creating that magic when you're actually with us. That makes you want to come back. And obviously,
remember Strawberry and not booking.com.
Yeah. Preferably, but yeah.
So one of the topics in the chapter is around how personalized the customer journey really can be. And I was going to ask you the same question. How personalized could a customer journey potentially become in hospitality?
Oh, I would say perhaps more than anywhere else. Because we cannot only reach you if it's through some sort of push marketing or interests or previous behaviors or obviously the same mechanisms as every other company. But we also get to keep you in our buildings for several hours where you actually sleep, eat, go to the toilet. Yeah, you do a whole lot of personal things that's within the personal sphere that should be out of bounds for what you can actually talk about. So I would say if you were able to misuse it in any way, it would be really, really harmful due to the fact that we know a whole lot of people, but there's obviously not all of those things we are systemizing and so forth. So that's on the one hand, the potential for not doing it coherently or in the right way.
It could become really creepy if you used all the data that you could collect.
It could be a really big brother sees you feeling. But on the other hand, people are, and especially from the retail perspective, used to the retailers really stepping up the game and doing a whole lot of great stuff regarding personalization. Mm-hmm. So customers' expectations on what hospitality can deliver is also increasing tremendously, because they know that my data patterns with a hotel company are even bigger than with an online retailer. Hence, there's rooms for improvements, I would say, overall for the hospitality industry, but you need to do it in the right manner, because if you start, I think there's really no way going back.
And also, I think that if you'd probably expect some kind of personalization from the customer point of view, especially if you are booking like a real premium product, if you're booking the presidential suite and like full on whatever, then you actually expect to be greeted in a more personalized way when you are in that moment of truth, seeing people and hearing from people and the follow up and so on. So to some extent, I would argue that personalization could become part of a hygiene factor, even because you have so different clients.
Absolutely. And I think it could be. I would say I speak a lot with our most loyal members and guests, and this is people traveling around the world having, I don't know if they sleep at home at all, basically, because they travel a lot. But there's so many of them, and including myself, it's really about the basic stuff, because as mentioned, what separates us is the meetings between humans. And if you have a super vast customer journey on the onboarding parts, in the newsletters, there's personal things catering to my needs, it's really hitting the sweet spot in the communication. That's super nice. If I do a booking, then show up at the hotel and there's a person not looking at me, not mentioning me, not greeting me, then everything is ruined. But the other way around, obviously, it would help having the other stuff as well, that it should be coherent, it should feel personalized. But in the physical meeting, it's so much more powerful. So actually a poor experience could be lifted tenfolded if somebody just fixes the issue or has that extra sense of attention to you and so forth. So,
I actually have an upcoming episode on that topic about what to fix before really doubling down on personalization. And I believe this would be part of sort of having your core business and your core product in place. Mm. And for you, that's extremely reliant on the people that are meeting the guests. So if they're not trained, if they're not up to speed, if they're not using the knowledge at their disposal, and if they're hungover from yesterday and not being attentive or whatever, then obviously I think that's the core product. And if that does not live up to expectations, I think no personalization can really save you from that. Other than the fact that maybe recognizing based on feedback when it's time to sell and when it's time to just lay down flat and say, sorry, we didn't deliver. Yeah. That's a personalized approach as well, being able to come back from something that didn't go as planned.
I agree. And of course, so many people say that in hospitality, and this is me sort of like being honest on behalf of the industry, there is potential of going a bit more back to the roots, I think, and focusing on putting more efforts, investments, if it's technology, personnel, learning and development, as they're saying, into making sure that the core really fits. Because the feedback in general for many is, yes, it's super nice to get points or discounts or some sort of benefits or rewards. But at the end of the day, I would trade everything if you could just recognize me when I come to the hotel. When you can acknowledge how many times I stayed, if I can feel that you think that I'm appreciated, and that's really what hospitality is about, make people feel at home, even if they aren't. So,
I'm just trying to sort of recollect the feeling. And I think I would have the exact same feeling. Mm-hmm. So if I really felt welcomed and appreciated and acknowledged and recognized, I think that would, even that level of personalization would mean something emotionally for this day, actually. But how personalized is the average journey? So say that the average of, say that you will have 1,000 nights of people staying at the hotel. How average is sort of, how personalized is the average journey?
Oh.
Maybe in general, in hospitality or in Strawberry.
Yeah. I would say, I hope that we're doing a bit better than the competition, but that's something I would say we have a long way to go as well. You should always strive at getting better. But for the industry as a whole, I think there's very many, very, very many hotels and companies that does a lot in the core product. But I do believe that tying it together in a more sensible manner, ranging all the way from how you try to inspire people or create engagement or nudge them to become relevant. Yep. If it's launching a new brand and putting yourself on their mind maps, or if it's, so I think the consistency and the coherence between the different parts that you actually show in your model, I think that's where the lack of focus comes in, because obviously, there's a traditional way of looking at communication, marketing automation, and that's, the marketing perspective to sell and so forth. But for me, talking about personalization and tying it together with loyalty, that's more about shifting the focus towards the people receiving it and looking at it from creating long-term value and getting to build trust and get the data points in return, so that you can even fuel that wheel even further. So I would say that there's so many great examples within the industry, but on average, there's a way to go in connecting it and tying it together. Mm. But then again, as mentioned, there's a lot of the people walking into the hotels that we do not necessarily cater to when it comes to the communication. If it's through travel agents or if there's walk-ins or whatever. Mm. So fixing the core task that whoever shows up in front of you, you should have really skillful people and routines and flexibility. People should be feeling the autonomy to actually cater to you. That's super important. But to really excel, you need to have more personalization also if it's on your websites, if it's through the newsletters and so forth, because people are in fact becoming spoiled watching or streaming television or doing shopping with an online retailer. And that experience is also coming into our parts of business, I would say.
So, okay, so a few things you're saying there, if I can just see and I can reflect it if I got it right. So I hear you saying that there's a, if you have the full customer journey, then parts of that will be obviously sort of marketing related and about selling the next whatever, the next stay, the next dinner, the next upgrade or whatever. But really when the core experience is, and where the common denominator for all your guests is that they go to the hotel. So if you could cater and use personalization more during the actual stay there or during the period around the stay, so you could enhance that experience. So it's not so much about necessarily selling the next night. It's about making your existing stay as pleasurable as possible through core services and nice people meeting them and so on, and a good ambience and a good core product, but also maybe adding personalization to increase that mix, to increase the emotional loyalty, and then people will be much more susceptible to actually get back and rebook at the hotel. That's sort of what I'm hearing from what you're saying.
Correct. That's a nice summary. And obviously, good experiences that are delivered correctly, that's the best selling approach you can. And there's tons of opportunities of doing upselling when you're even at the facilities, and it can be done in a really natural and well-fitted manner as well. Forcing people to visit you again, it's really about them wanting to come back again and doing whatever it takes to get there. So,
and there are plenty of examples of the opposite. I was staying at one of your competitors once, and I was wrongly charged with a bottle of wine at the restaurant. And they charged a bottle of wine on my company card that we didn't have. And the restaurant people weren't entitled to do the refund. So it came into a very long process, and I was on the company card, and you know, I couldn't have this expenditure that I didn't have, and they handled it so poorly. So coming back to hygiene factors, if people are battling with that, then I would say going to personalization, it's not going to fix it really, because that was such a poor experience. But there's a gap here, because we were talking about how personalized it could be, and that could be fairly personalized, and then the average is obviously below that. What is causing this gap? What are sort of the three main reasons you think for there's a gap between the average experience, how personalized that is, and how personalized it could be?
I think one is more as you know, there's no journey that is 100% replicable to another, from one person to another, obviously. But there are some patterns, and there are some segments, and there are some customers that you can, in fact, try to do the same. And there are some touch points within our customer journeys that everybody will touch at some point. So it's real about finding those key elements, more like a service or loyalty blueprint somehow. Where you know that you can excel and that you can do something great. But then again, it's really fragmented, as mentioned. So I would say, number one, it's making sure that at least your own channels in the digital world, if it's the websites, the communication, getting automation, and those aspects are in sync with what you actually send people into. And make sure that the discrepancies you have between them are aligned, and that you know that where to push for the motivating factors and where to actually perform on the hygiene factors. And then and then there's always in service the chance to at some point surprise and delight or bring some sort of added value.
Yeah, we had that as a topic actually in an earlier podcast with Matt Johnson. He's a neuroscientist. He was saying that the thing about serendipity, if you can give people an experience that was unexpectedly good, then they really remember it. And I think actually personalization could do a thing there. I mean, you could put this into system and this random act of kindness that people don't expect, but it's a little extra that you didn't expect.
I agree. And that's my third point, I would say, that you can do those things, but you should then empower people of doing them in a flexible and adapted manner, because obviously you need some tools in the shed. But if I use the same mechanism towards you, it won't end up being a surprise anymore at some point. Yeah. It will be an hygiene factor that would, for us, drive up the cost. For you, if you come to one of the hotels and we actually do not deliver, you're like, what did I do wrong this time? Because that pillow I got last time that was red, it's not here anymore. So what the heck? What have I done wrong? So it's really about making sure that the link between actually what is expected and what can be surprised and delivered and done on that end is you have a tactic or you have a strategy for it, but not overdoing it, because then you're stuck again.
I think we're an ungrateful species, humans.
Very much so.
Really easily get accustomed to being treated well. All right. So I think some of the causes, I'm just thinking top of my head here, obviously the OTA source of customers is going to cause you some trouble in terms of personalizing because you don't know the customer. So I would say that's probably a cause and of there being a difference between the average personalization, the average personalized experience, as well as compared to the how it could be. Obviously, that's a data loss that you would have there. And maybe also what I hear you saying is that people are maybe looking too much on the tools and what the tools do instead of looking at the customer journey and where really to focus. So what are those moments where we should? I mean, just because you can send personalized newsletters doesn't mean that that is the place to double down with personalization and that will give you the most impact for customer loyalty. That could, from our conversation here, I'm sort of thinking that the stay and the period around the stay at a hotel of yours would be the place to really double down on personalization, including equipping the frontline staff with knowledge and insights on, okay, so who is Rasmus? He's been here before. How many times did he come here? And really trying to sort of level with me at an emotional level. I think that would be maybe my small conclusion on our talk here.
You're right. But then again, the OTAs, it's a huge opportunity as well, because you actually get an influx of people you potentially couldn't reach on your own. So you have to do the job on site and in the aftermath as good as possible. But I would say also...
maybe thinking data collection into that first meeting. So it's first time you meet someone who booked through an OTA. How can we, in a gentle way and not, without being too nosy, how can we get some information about people's preferences and how to make the stay as comfortable as possible and then deliver on that? I think that will be, boom, that will make me come back and book directly next time.
Definitely. Sort of like a second visit strategy. But I would say at the end of the day, there are frequent travelers. Some travel more than others, but on average in the Nordics, people stay at the hotel 1.3 nights a year. While we also talked briefly about retail or groceries, I do believe that the average Nordic person goes to the grocery store more than 1.3 times a year. Transaction frequency or the number of visits or whatever you call it, it's much, much higher. At some level, it would be more relevant to get information about someone I do something with more often than with hotels.
Yeah.
But then again, we have also the magic of being inspiring and creating lasting moments or delivering something you're looking forward to, planning with others. So for us, there's really a combination of using personalized data in a sensible manner. And I would say transactional data, that's worth something if you're a business traveler, for instance. But I don't know about you, but I do not make the same summer holiday for the family every year, the exact same recipe. It might be a different destination. It might be different stuff. So using transactional data on the low frequent volumes, that could be a trap. But then again, the preferences or my expectations or what triggers me of inspiration, if it's beaches, mountains, I don't know. But getting those data in and using them in a sensible manner towards delivering personalization, that's where the magic happens, because at the end of the day, 1.3 nights, that's very low.
People's dreams.
Yes. So I think to increase that frequency, at least for the low frequent travelers, that's you need to hit some sweet spots. And I think that although you don't have that much data, there's a lot of things you can do. And you, so we're working a bit with that, both testing, using control groups, and seeing where can we be more inspirational versus where do you actually just want the bread and butter delivered to you.
You probably have a fairly polarized sort of customer frequency of people. So you have business customers, not that many, but coming there a lot. And then you have a long tail of people staying 1.3 nights a year.
Absolutely.
And sort of that must be, I'm just thinking out here, that must be one of the core insights, finding out who's who in that spectrum in terms of value-based segments.
Yeah, it really does. So that being said, we are within our loyalty program now. We are soon becoming 3 million members, so we reach 2.7 somewhere now. And that's really helpful because we actually get to track some data better. We have the chance of communicating to you and so forth. So, and the hotels and our online channels is doing a great job sort of like fetching that and making sure that we have that in place, because that gives us also the chance of viewing at our membership base and that long tail you're referring to in a different way. So without disclosing too much, obviously we have been working a bit traditionally from our end as well, having points as a mechanism, the transactional elements. We've been having rewards and benefits that you qualify for. There's been some elements of surprise and delight, but perhaps not enough. But also going back to why we changed from Nordic Choice Hotels to Strawberry, and putting sort of like the whole experience more in the center of it, means that we would also add or change a few of the mechanisms from our side and looking more at your total engagement with us rather than only viewing your transaction with us. Because you might be the most loyal person that always reads our newsletters and think that it's great, or you answer to surveys and you do a whole lot of things, but you never get rewarded for it. So that's one. Perhaps you should, perhaps you shouldn't. But the 1.3 times you do a booking, it always with us, you're 100% loyal.
Yeah.
But then again, that's us measuring you sleeping in one of our beds. But from all I know, you might go to Villa Copenhagen to eat lunch, or go to Admiral in Copenhagen to have a beer, or
I do ecosystem.
Yes. So our ecosystem is actually bigger than only measuring the hotel rooms. So we have to create this measurement of actually looking at overall engagement in the digital channels with the different services we provide, and then rewarding you on behalf of that rather than just your employer paying for your overnights, which is the traditional way of doing it.
So you're sort of transcending the earn and burn, simple transactions, points, whatever, and really looking into how can you be creative in the earn side of things, different ways of maybe rewarding engagement and not only the head to the pillow kind of experience, but rewarding the full picture and the engagement, and then also taking that into how I think this is a part that is often overlooked. That if I don't use the points, if I don't use the rewards, if I don't use the benefits, then basically I don't experience them, and there's no perceived benefit from my end. That's how it goes. I'm sorry to point out at Scandinavian Airlines, but I never used any of their benefits, and because I couldn't figure out how, and they failed to tell me, and it's the points amount to almost nothing, so they mean absolutely nothing to me. Whereas if I was rewarded with, I don't know, even a drink at one of your bars, or I mean, small rewards, small benefits, small surprises that aren't necessarily just one extra night out of 10, one private night out of 10 that my employer paid. I think there's a much broader net there, being creative and doing on-brand rewards that people actually take care to redeem, and thus they get the emotional feeling of being catered to and having a personal experience.
Definitely. And I'm being a bit nerdy about loyalty and loyalty programs as well, obviously. But I think I've sort of like placed the correlation towards personalization here, because it's the central point. But I would say in general, it's becoming too many programs. Becoming too complex to understand, or it's being too spread out, thinly so. That makes it even harder for customers. And interestingly enough, in the Nordics, it's even worse than in other parts of the world.
I have some numbers on that for a report that Mando Connect is doing, and it's terrible. I can spill the beans here that Denmark is, at least Denmark, and I think Sweden, Norway is somewhat the same. People are happy to sign up for a loyalty program, but also they're fairly disappointed in what they actually get.
Yeah. So what's that about, basically? Because everybody wants to have a loyalty program because they've heard so many things about it. You have a member base and or you have a newsletter or you can get some data, but you need to have a plan and you need to stick to it. And what's the core purpose of doing it? Sort of like zooming out and looking at the Nordic people at once, it's not easy to cut through the grapevine, so to say, in how it's become. And knowing that, in fact, if it's in the US or in UK for that manner, they are a bit more transactional or coupon based, or I get this and it's a discount here and discount there. I do believe personally, I don't have any data to look into it, but the emotional parts and actually feeling that it brings added value, I think we're a bit more picky on that in the Nordics. But then watering out those levels, becoming members of a whole lot more programs, being a bit more unfaithful on who you do the purchases with, it really makes it makes the mix of both personalization and how you rate the loyalty programs a bit gray. So you need to stick out and you do need to do things a bit differently in the years to come.
I've been giving this actually a lot of thought also, and I think I agree with you. I think some of the problems, or one of the problems, relies in the fact that we have fairly small customer databases in the Nordics. So, I mean, you'd find Hilton loyalty rewards boosting 100 million members or whatever. I don't know. I don't have the numbers. But, I mean, we don't operate with that kind of scale here in the Nordics. I mean, 3 million members in the Strawberry Loyalty Club, I think that's a pretty sound number. That means that you can actually get some real – you can pay salaries with the added value in CLV that – you can get through personalization or by getting the hygiene factors up to par. So that's check on that. Then I also think I'd like to think that we are in the Nordics as emotional as Americans or whomever, but somehow we're just not at a point from a loyalty manager's perspective where we're tapping into that. It seems like people have a hard time imagining more than the transactional earn and burn, get one night for every 10 that you stay with us. I think so. There's an imagination thing. Maybe also there may also be a technological thing that is keeping us from that. So people struggling with data and execution systems and personalization platforms and such. Yeah. But
I agree. But at the end of the day, I think it's try not to do everything at once. Obviously, it's hard to understand personalization. There's so many things I do not from the theoretical perspective or haven't even tried myself. Within loyalty, the same. And there's hundreds of things you can do, and there's more players doing a lot of stuff. But I do believe that put your head out, try things a bit differently, and deliver on the core issues. So you're referring to the airline there. Yeah. Obviously, their core customers that's been holding their program up for years, their sort of like core community, the people sitting in row 1 to 18, forcing their feet into the aircraft first, that's been a core segment, and they understand it. But what about the rest of us, and especially you're referring to that long tail of people? If you want to become more relevant, you need to do something to stand out. If it's so, I do believe, and that has to do with not only look at the purchases, but look at what drives engagement and how you actually deliver engagement.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So are you measuring this on CLV? You were mentioning the control groups earlier. Are you, tell us a bit about how you are working to sort of measure this?
Yeah, obviously we work with CLV, but I can say the limitation of that is, glasses on for 3 years and let's see if it has an impact. No, it's a more running basis than that.
But you don't know if it will come again. Yeah.
So, yeah. No. So you have obviously the churn mechanisms and CLV and so forth, but I do believe for us, and particularly to what I was mentioning, we are working with NPS, which isn't only about satisfaction. It's also about having promoters that speaks loudly about you and actually appreciates you and would recommend you and so forth. So working closely with that, it's super important. So we fetch information, ask people after they've stayed with us or visited us, is there anything we could have done better? We make sure to answer back if it's the hotel manager that does it, if it's us centrally, or make sure that we have that feedback loop well implemented. But for the sort of like the KPIs and then going more into the engagement parts of it, you can do it super detailed, but you can also give yourself or set up some zeros and ones to actually see, is it a yes or no? Is it a thumbs up or down? Because for me, people are asking, oh, how did you perceive this? And I might get lengthy surveys. Or at the airport, I might just get that red to green smile on the face. And for me, it cuts it. And I guess for them as well. Yeah. Thumbs up or down. So yes, there's so many things you can measure. And there's so many things you do not have time to measure. So coming back to that again, yes, CLV and more like the generic loyalty metrics is super important. But I'm lucky because I work in an organization that actually believes in loyalty and the long-term effects of it. But then again,
so don't have to justify every single initiative.
No, I won't say so. But of course, if we have some crazy ideas, we need to look at some sorts of ROI. And it's really hard to say that no, but you know, in 10 years' time, we'll get the money back on this. That doesn't work. We're in hospitality. Every unsold room is a loss of opportunity. So we actually need to be quite close to that as well. And then working closely with the hotels or with the restaurants or whatever, and looking at the impacts of it and measuring differences and trying out new ways. Like during the pandemic, it went quiet, mostly, at least in our industry. A lot of people went to buying wood and making new terraces and so forth, but for us we chose to stand out a bit and seeing that okay, people are forced spending their nights in the Nordics, so what can we do? We can offer them some travel cards, travel pass that makes you have 10 stays with us for a fixed amount of money or two whole months and so forth, and we also introduced that and some of the campaigns through personalized videos. So that's using more the generic metrics like your first name, your membership level, your favorite hotels, and so forth.
Talking about surprise, I think personalized videos is still something that will surprise most people.
I agree, 100%. And obviously, getting information through videos, also with a small sense of hitting your, if it's only your name or a few transactions or some details that are generic enough not to be spooky. But also personal enough for you to feel appreciated, then it brings a whole lot more than just people spamming with newsletters. Because I said to myself,
there's plenty of that.
Yeah, it is. And before speaking with you today, I said, shit, I think not only in our industry, but everywhere, people need to take a bit of responsibility for how much do we actually send out. Looking at my commercial advertising folder in Google, I think it's a couple hundred mails per day.
Me too. Yeah. I just recently like mass unsubscribed a lot of them because I was being flooded. And sometimes my kids joke with me because I have literally over 100,000 unread emails across my different inboxes. I mean, I'm also pretty keen on signing up to a lot of stuff because I want to see what people are sending me. And it's normally crap. I would say, and it doesn't make it a wrong thing to do because there's also things about being top of mind and so on, and indeed being there always present in the inbox as a brand, that is part of what you should be doing. It's not related so much to personalization, but that's like an advertisement channel almost, but you can turn it into a personalized experience, which most brands fail to do though.
I agree.
And the KPIs, it sounds like you're actually both measuring on, I mean, obviously CLV, that's a KPI that you can use to pay salary with, so to speak. I mean, that's where you're measuring real monetary value. But you're also measuring the more soft engagement metrics. I mean, net promoter score, maybe even drawing a correlation between that. Did you ever do that? What is a promoter worth versus versus a detractor?
Yeah, to some extent, we can see some patterns. I would say that we have a way to go in systemizing it in a more comprehensive manner. But yeah, we see the correlations, and obviously that gives us, I would say, yeah, keep changing, chasing both of them, because they are really dependent on each other, if done
and
correctly.
And sometimes one is a proxy metric of the other. So I was listening to Gibson Biddle, previous head of product at Netflix, and he was talking very much about it's very fine to have these like long-term metrics that you're wanting to affect, but as we just discussed, CLV takes a long time to sort of come true. So if you're trying to affect something that's really big and hairy goal in the future, then see if you can come up with some proxy metrics that you know or that you have proof or that you strongly believe will eventually make this long-term behavior come true. Then use those as a metric where you can use that to optimize and get an understanding of whether is this actually working right now. And if we believe that is the case, then we have a firm belief that this will also materialize itself into long-term CLV in the future. I think that approach for me makes really good sense, and NPS could be one of those.
Absolutely. That's a very smart way of attacking it, I would say.
We're sort of drawing towards an end here. Howard, this has been crazy interesting. The chapter that we're discussing, tying it all up in the bow tie, talks about three maturity levels, very granular, like 1, 2, 3, beginner, intermediate, expert. Sort of on a scale from basically 0 to 3, what would you say the average maturity level for personalization is within hospitality?
I would say, at least looking at the industry and then viewing it from the industrial players, I would say reaching into the intermediate level or at number 2, I would say on average on all three aspects. But then there are definitely some outliers that does a whole lot on some parts of it.
Yeah,
that stands out, especially from campaigns. I would say that's where, speaking about flooding emails, I think also hotels does a lot of sort of like screaming discounts and doing too much of the generic information to everyone, knowing personally that you actually have a whole lot more data that could be altered and better equipped. So I think that part of doing the campaigns on a more mature level, that's one place where the hospitality industry in particular could get even better, especially knowing that the number of transactions is rather low on average. Hence, look at different mechanisms and play more towards inspiration. And then for loops back to marketing automation as well, but that's where I think people's expectations will increase in the years to come due to the fact that you actually put a lot more data back to a hotel chain or someone you stay with and buy online with than you do with someone to just pick up something from, for instance. Mm. So, but it's on an intermediate level, I would say, on average. So
maybe with what we discussed, potential in the physical meeting or during the actual stay with people that meet you and talk to you, informing them, equipping them with the insights.
Yeah, definitely. And that's where you can have those easy mechanisms in place to just do it. And so I think on average, it's getting better. It's being more invested in. I would say the travel industry is perhaps also where loyalty programs and the first steps of personalization started once back. And then there's been some evolution coming out of online retailing and a lot of those things are now coming back because the traditional players, hotels, airlines, so forth, has also moved into that part. So, but I think getting those parts together could create some future magic, and I think that hospitality has the chance of really excelling in it because you have more data, you have more physical moments to play with, you have people longer with you. So as you're saying, getting to know and use that correctly, that's super interesting.
Right. To end off, thank you. What's your own favorite example of personalization that you've experienced as a consumer or customer?
You know, I'm just... obviously, I certainly have some things I'm picky about as well. But for me, it's actually about those easy, unexpected things. But for me, it was actually, and could have been anywhere else as well, one of our hotels. So I went there end of the week, a different city than I stay with. This was in Stockholm. Came to one of the hotels late in the afternoon, spent the whole day in meetings and planned to stay there for the weekend. So came into the hotel room in the afternoon, walked by the reception because I just logged myself into the self-service station, thought that I need to test the products and so forth. And then just walked by the receptionist, said hi, and went up to the room. And there was a few hours till dinner, so I strapped my joggers on and went for a run by the reception and out there, and coming back an hour later or so. Then the receptionist, once again, when I go past her, just nods and say hi, come up to the room, and there's a small bag hanging on the door. Inside it, there's a green apple, a small bottle of water, and it's a note saying, hope you had a nice run.
Wow.
Yeah, for me, that was really hitting the sweet spot. Because not only has the person see or greeted me, but she's actually done the effort going into the system, seeing that this guy actually used the self-service station.
Yeah.
She has looked up what room I'm at. She has paid attention, actually viewing that I have been out running and then fixing it all until I come back. And obviously not herself. She has had some colleagues going up there, fetching the green apple from the kitchen, tapping the water into the bottle and so forth. So there's, for me, this example is attentiveness, people having the autonomy to do the correct things, having the knowledge to view the systems, being contextual in seeing me on site. And then again, just putting a smile on the physical parts of it as well, making me feel well.
Yeah. And it feels like something you wouldn't expect. So it's a surprise as well.
Exactly. And not costly. It's a green apple and some tap water. But for me, it was the best thing I've ever gotten.
Much better than whatever points in your loyalty account.
Cannot recall how many points I got from that state, to say it like that. So yeah.
Okay. And we're talking about it now. So the fact of that alone is pretty tremendous. All right, Håvard, I think we are towards the end. Thank you so much for discussing this with me. This was very, very interesting. I feel that I learned a lot about the hospitality sector and loyalty. So for me, that was a huge, huge pleasure.
Thank you the same, Rasmus, and thanks for having me. This was really nice. Always fun to be a bit nerdy about loyalty and personalization.
Yeah, exactly. Let's nerd it out, yeah. And for the listeners, for the audience here, for the viewers, even if you're looking at this on YouTube, I just say thank you very much for joining and listening in on this. And remember that the models that we're talking about, the bow tie of personalization, and also actually the maturity model that we briefly touched upon, the pyramid of personalization, is available for download. And I hope that you will make use of them with your own team members and so on. I'll put the link in the show notes. And apart from that, I just hope that I get to see you again, and you'll tune in for the next episode of the podcast. And so thank you very much for joining.
Thank you for listening in on this episode of Hello First Name. Remember that all models and even a written abstract of the book are available for download. You'll find the link in the show notes.
In our next episode, which is a classical audiobook chapter, we'll be listening to Chapter 15, The Basic Foundations for Personalization. While personalization may always seem like a good idea from the customer perspective, how about the business side of things? In this chapter, we'll look into what needs to be in place before personalization is the right strategic choice.